There I'm. Oh, my goodness sakes. Let me get away from it. I don't like being that loud. Anyway, we have for the next half hour a very special presentation, and we're calling it, I love the name, Happy Valentine's. It's all about heart, body, mind, and yoga. And this is Ed and Maud Valentine, and they instruct for Valentine yoga. Welcome them, please. Thank you.
Thank you all very much, and welcome to our session. As she said, my name is Ed Valentine, and with me is my wife, Maud Valentine. And we both are certified yoga instructors, and she is also certified with the International Association of Yoga Therapists as a yoga therapist. We have a small studio in Tacoma, Washington, where we both teach, but most of our work is done outside the studio. Maud has an in-home private practice where she goes to people's homes and does some one-on-one yoga. And I teach chair yoga at a local senior center in Tacoma. And I don't know if all of you are aware, but yoga in itself is not a religion. A lot of people think yoga is a religion, but it is not. Nobody knows exactly how long yoga has been around, but we know it's been here at least 5,000 years with all the paintings they found on the caves in India. And traditionally, yoga was passed down to the guru, to the student, one-on-one, not the big classes that we see today where there's 20 and 30 people in the class. It was all one-on-one. And yoga in India originally, under British rule, they told them in India they couldn't do yoga anymore, so a lot of the traditional stuff was lost. And it is, yoga came to the U.S. in the late 1800s. But it didn't become very popular until the late 60s when four young men met up with a gentleman by the name of the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. And those four young men were John, Paul, George, and Ringo, otherwise known as the Beatles. And believe it or not, they pretty much popularized yoga in America. Yes.
How did you get into yoga?
How did I get into yoga? Well, I got really sick. I came down with cancer, and I was looking for different ways to get healthy, and yoga was one of the things I decided I wanted to do. And I had to take my wife kicking and screaming to our first yoga class.
That's because I wanted to know why you wanted me to change my religion.
She's a devout Catholic, and she said, I'm not changing my religion for anybody. But yoga is not a religion. So after a few classes, she kind of figured it out. We both figured that out. And here we are 20-some years later. The doctor said I'd be dead 20 years ago, and here I am. So what do they know? And I'm sure yoga has a lot to do with that. There's a lot of reasons to try yoga. Here are 10 of the reasons, real quickly. Stress relief. Yoga is good for stress relief. Pain relief. Better breathing. Flexibility, of course. Increased strength and weight management. Most people don't think of yoga as a way to control weight, but it really helps. Look how fat I am. It's good for improved circulation, cardiovascular conditioning, better body alignment, and then focusing on the present so your mind's not all wandering helter-skelter here and there. And if you need more information, it's available to you from Lori Allison to download to your phone or to your computer. And now I'm going to turn it over to Maud. He's going to give you some examples of what we do in yoga.
He can turn it over to me, but I have no idea how to turn this mic on. So I'm going to take this mic off of here. Here we go. This is going to be short and sweet. We got started a little bit late. Oh, yes, it will. Yay. The beginning of a yoga class, I use what are called tingshas or bells or something to center. And I brought my tingshas. And we're going to go ahead and do a very short seated yoga class for you. So The bells, the tingshas, center you, and then at the end you'll hear it again, and I'll do a guided imagery for you. Also, at the end of yoga class, there's what they call shavasana, and it's a deep relaxation or guided imagery. And at the end, you'll hear the tingshas again. Coming to a comfortable seated position with your spine nice and erect, lifting from the crown of your head as if you had an imaginary string. It was tied right to the top of your head, and it's lifting you straight up, lengthening your spine with each breath. Taking in a deep breath, gently roll both shoulders up towards your ears and then back down and away, letting go of everything you've had to deal with. The past is gone. There's nothing you can do about it. Another deep breath in, shoulders up. Exhale back, down, and away, letting go of anything you may have to care for later on. The future is not here yet. We don't really know what it holds in store for us. One more time. Shoulders up. Big breath in. Exhale back, down, and away, bringing that awareness into the present, into now, into this very short little demonstration of yoga. Let's pretend we have a pencil. It's right on the end of your nose, and you're going to draw with it. You're going to draw a U, inhaling up on the right, and then exhale down as you bring your chin across your chest, drawing the bottom of the U, and then inhale up on the left. Exhale down again, bringing your chin across your chest. You're retracing that U. Inhale up on the right. Exhale down one more time, slow and gentle, moving with your breath, filling the lungs fully, and then empty, empty, empty. And then back to center. Center's where you start, so you're sitting nice and tall. Lifting from the crown of your head, inhale, lift. Exhale your right ear over towards the right shoulder. There's a tendency to bring your shoulder to the ear. Let the shoulder relax down and away. And back to center, right where you started. Inhale, lift, lengthen. Exhaling your left ear over towards your left shoulder. Again, relaxing that left shoulder down and away. Good, good. And back to center. Inhale, lift, lengthen. Exhale your head forward, allowing the weight of your head to open up the back of your neck just by gravity. And back to center. Now we're going to do some shoulder circles. For the sake of time, we're going to take both shoulders. Normally, I'd do one, but we're going to take them both. Back and up, and then forward and down. You're just rolling your shoulders. Back, up towards your ears, and then forward, like you're curling your spine forward, and then back and up again. One more time, and just one last time. Now you're going to take that movement in the opposite direction. So whichever way you're going, go the other way. Just roll the shoulders gently, nice and slow, moving with your breath. Big breath in, big breath out, big breath in, big breath out. And just one more time. Now, being aware of the person next to you so that you don't whack them, take your arms out and up and overhead, if that feels okay to you. Bring your palms together overhead, and then bring them down to the middle of your chest. In yoga, that's your heart center. Clasping your hands, taking in a deep breath as you exhale, invert your palms in front of you. You're just turning them wrong side out. And then up and overhead, and release them and let them float like a feather all the way down to your chair. Soft and gentle. Holding on to your chair with your right hand, take your left arm up and overhead and turn your face towards that left palm as that palm opens up. Now turn the palm and let it float back down. Now the right arm, up and overhead, turn your face towards that right palm. Turn the palm down and let it float down again. Bring your right shoulder forward. So take your right hand, put it on your left leg. And take your left shoulder behind you. You can hold on to the chair if you'd like. Now, without moving your shoulders, take in a deep breath. Exhale gently and turn your face towards your left shoulder. Turn your face towards your left shoulder. Always listening to your body. This is a gentle spinal twist. Now, coming back to center, bring your left hand to your right leg. Take your right shoulder, bring it behind you, and hold on to your chair if that feels okay to you. Inhale, lift from the crown of your head, and then exhale, turning your head to face back over that right shoulder, just as far as your body says it's okay. And back to center. Now we're going to do a body circle. So give yourself a little bit of room. Place your hands on your lap or your legs. And move your upper body in a circular motion. Moving with your breath, you're getting a nice squeeze and soak effect in your abdominal area. I know we just ate. Don't squeeze it too hard. And just one more time, and then the opposite direction. This is theory by Maud, okay? This is not yoga lecture here, but there's a magic number I use, and it's three. If you can only do something for a little bit of time, do it three times. Three times, opposite direction, and back to center. You guys are great. You did your whole upper body already. We can do a wrist circle if you'd like with your right hand and then go the opposite direction. The magic number is three. And then open your palm real wide and close it. And then open it real wide as you inhale. Take a deep breath. And then close your palm. Put your thumb on the inside this time. Inhale, open. Exhale, closed. And release. Do your other hand. Wrist circle, wrist circle, wrist circle. And then the opposite direction, at least. Magic number three. If you're in a hurry, just think about that. It'll work for you. It'll give you a little bit of movement. Now we're going to bloom a flower. And this is a very gentle movement for your back. And you're going to inhale and open up your arms like a flower blooming out. And spread your fingers wide. And then curl your spine like the Halloween cat thing. And curl yourself forward, cross your right arm over your left arm, and just curl your body up so that you can get rid of all the air in your lungs that you can. And then inhale, bloom your flower again. Reach out like your flower's blooming, beautiful. And then exhale, put the other arm on top and empty your lungs. I have to get a time check here. My timer is sleeping. Man. Okay, we're going to do some ankle circles. If you can scoot your chair just a little and just do a little ankle circle round and round with your right leg or your left leg and then go the opposite direction and then release it down. Do the other leg, ankle circle, ankle circle, ankle circle, and then the opposite direction. At least three times. And release. I'm going to do the guided imagery because I want to do this for you because I really worked hard on this and so it's all about Maud. No, I'm just kidding. You're going to enjoy it. You're going to enjoy it. Just sit back and relax. Take in a deep breath. If I could get the music going again, I would. Maybe I'll give it to Ed and see if he can make it go. Listen only to the sound of my voice. And if we get music, maybe to the sound of the music. And in just a few moments, you're going to be more relaxed than you've ever known yourself to be. In order to help you relax, I want you to imagine yourself in a wonderful, magical forest. You can smell the earthy smell of the forest. And the scent of wildflowers. wafting on the breeze. You can feel the last remnants of the warm sunshine on your skin. It's almost night and you hear the sounds of the evening all around you. You hear a pair of doves cooing to each other and a big old hoot owl high in the trees hooing his nighttime call. Off in the distance, you hear the hypnotic sounds of a babbling brook, and the crickets seem to be lulling you to sleep. As you remain motionless, you begin to notice a wonderful, warm energy just above your head. This energy is the most relaxing and warm sensation you could ever imagine. And as this warm, relaxing energy begins to lower around the crown of your head, you seem to be touched with a desire and a willingness to relax deeper and deeper with every breath you take. Continuing lower now, this warm energy begins to touch your forehead, smoothing out your forehead and relaxing that space right in between your eyes. Now you feel this relaxing sensation, which is filled with a soothing, healing energy coming around your eyes. And your eyelids seem to become very, very heavy. So heavy they don't even seem to want to open. They may flutter a little bit, but that's okay. Just feel how heavy they are. And as the relaxation comes down around the facial muscles now, all the little muscles in the facial area just begin to relax. Relaxation comes further down around the mouth now, and all the hundreds of little muscles around the mouth just start to relax. So much so that the lower jawbone becomes heavy and the teeth part. The mouth may even open a little bit with relaxation as you continue deeper and deeper relaxed. Feel this relaxation now around the lower jawbone and behind the ears so that all the little nerve endings behind the ears just seem to relax. You continue deeper and deeper and even deeper. The relaxation goes to the back of your neck now, down around your shoulders, and you feel the shoulders just begin to relax. You can even feel them droop a little. The relaxation seems to go to your backbone now, and as it goes down the spinal column, it seems to go out to the sides so that every muscle, every nerve, and every fiber in your back just seems to relax. The relaxation comes to the small of your back and around the curves of your buttocks. This warm sense of relaxation comes to the back of your thighs now and into the hollow of your knees, around the calves, down into your heel, to the bottom of your feet, and each and every toe just relaxes even more and more as you go deeper and even deeper. Calm, very peaceful, very relaxed. And now, if necessary, remaining deeply relaxed, allow yourself to shift your body however you need to in order to become even more comfortable and even more relaxed. We're going to proceed to relax the rest of you now, starting with the throat muscles. Feel the throat muscles just start to relax. And now this healing energy comes down the front of your shoulders, down the upper arm, over the elbow, down the forearm to the hand, and each and every finger just relaxes more and more as you go deeper, deeper and even deeper relaxed. Just relaxing, doing so very, very well now. As you continue to relax, feel this warm healing energy coming back to the throat muscles, down into the chest and all the muscles and organs within the stomach, just seem to relax. This warm sensation of relaxation goes down into the thighs, over the knees, down the shin bone, across the instep of the foot, and into the foot itself. And each and every toe just relaxes more and more as you go deeper and deeper. Relax deeper, and you continue even deeper. Calm and very, very relaxed. Surrounded by this warm, healing, and relaxing energy. In your state of total and complete relaxation, feel the universal healing energy that surrounds your entire being. Allow this energy to spread throughout your body to all of those parts of your body, mind, and spirit that may need healing. As you sit here in silence, imagine a pair of soft, warm, and friendly hands resting on your shoulders. These hands are directing this healing energy into your body, and in doing so, your body will intuitively direct this energy to any areas that may need special attention. If your mind starts to wander while you are sitting, simply bring your focus back to the warm hands on your shoulders. Bringing a little movement back into your arms and legs, moving and stretching in any way your body requests. Bringing your palms together at that heart center, right in the middle of your chest. And slowly and gently coming out of your state of deep relaxation, knowing in your heart that a healing has taken place and that this healing energy will remain with you and continue to nurture all the areas of your body, mind, and spirit. Now, feeling energized and yet relaxed, bring your awareness back into the room, to the sound of my music, and to the sound of my voice. Namaste. We have time for a couple questions, if you have any. I would be happy to answer them. And if you're asleep, wake up. It's okay if you don't. That means that you have a question. Okay. I will have an answer. It may not be the right one, but I will have an answer.
How often does this make you want to tear up?
It depends on the person. Frequently. Frequently. Some people cry every yoga class, and it is what it is. Not to worry. They're your emotions.
It's okay to do that.
It's your experience. It's all good.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am, I have a question. This is Melissa Hudson.
Yes, Melissa.
Hi, nice to meet you. And
thank you.
What a beautiful voice you have.
Thank you.
I have stainless steel rods and pins in my back. I have a spinal condition, so I had surgery to fix that, but due to that surgery, I cannot bend over. I can't do a lot of things with my back. So is yoga strictly a back thing, or is there things that I can do if I took a yoga class? Thank you.
Yoga is definitely not a back thing. And your back is what it is. I've had back surgery myself, and I do take yoga, but I've been doing it for like 20-some years. So there's a difference. obviously. And there's many moves that you can do that would be modified. And the chair yoga class is wonderful for a lot of people who cannot move their back. And you just modify everything. You change it to fit your needs. Does that answer your question?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Thank you so much.
I'll just take it in my hand. Thank you. Wasn't that wonderful, you guys? Are you relaxed? Thank you so much. That was beautifully done. Is Heather Mears in the room? All right, Heather. Why don't you come and introduce your panel and do your thing?
Well, I would like to.
You can stand at the podium if you want, or paving the way to creativity. So that's what Heather's going to be sharing with you. Here you go, Heather. Here's the podium and the mic. There you go, my dear. There you go.
All right. Well, first of all, I need to know if my panel is actually here. Yeah, so I need Jolene Ferguson and Frank Cuda and Dan Lavelle. And while we're waiting, just confirm with me, but I'll just kind of tell you a little bit about what inspired this panel. Was that I know that we all have things, you know, that stress us out, and you know, it's easy to think about the things that are difficult in your life that you have to go through on a daily basis, the challenges we all face. But I choose to live my life with joy and passion, and to do the things that I enjoy and to share them with other people. And I also love to seek out people that do the same thing and hear their stories. So that's what this panel is to me, and that's why I'm sharing it with you today. So do we have everybody here? Okay, so I will start with Frank Cuda, and I titled his session, An Engineer Gone Wild.
Okay, so I like to build things, okay? And I today I'm going to talk about snap circuits. Snap circuits are kind of like Legos, except that each Lego thing has got a resistor or a capacitor or a transistor or some other electronic component on it. Now, I have a snap circuits board here in front of me, and people can come up and look at it or catch me later or during the break probably and look at it. But it's basically about the size of an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper, and it's got little Lego-like nubbins, but they're, instead of being close together, they're 1 inch apart. And it's the, they're numbered and lettered so that there are letters. Each row is a letter, like A, B, C, D, E. And each column is a number, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and up to 10. So typical instructions are put capacitor C1, which would be Braille's, okay, on A1 through A3. And or put resistor 5 from A3 down to C3. And you can make a, basically the instructions can be as simple as a list of instructions like that. And, and the projects start out very simple, building little, oh, they have sound generators and their speakers and synthesizers and little power things and motors and, you know, their batteries and you, basically you start out with simple things that just take one level. But like the AM radio I put together had like 4 levels. So the, once you start filling up the board, then you start stacking things on top of one another, you know. And, it gets very complicated looking. But it, since you just build one piece at a time, it's very, very nice, very simple, very easy to do and kind of fun. And the first AM radio I put together from a list like that was out on the web. produced by one of the guys at the American Printing House. And it didn't work very well, okay? But then I got a more advanced kit, and I used Ira to guide me through the process of putting the more advanced radio together. And it actually was a pretty good AM radio. I mean, I could tune it to various stations. It wasn't really super sensitive, but it had about 20 or 30 different resistors, capacitors, and variable resistors, variable potentiometers, several transistors, so it was, it was a much more advanced project. What I did for this purpose was I got a microphone stand and managed to mount the camera or mount my iPhone on the boom of the stand so that it was looking downward and about 12 inches off the table. And then I could move the project underneath and move it around depending on what the IRA representative wanted to see. The IRA representative, on the other hand, was looking at something he or she called up on the web, which is, the same instruction manual I had, but it's all out there on the web, and they could look at the diagrams and so on. The tough thing about snap circuits is that the instructions are just a picture of the finished product. I mean, there's no text really at all. And so, from what I can gather, they can see enough of the way it's blown up or whatever that they can see where each piece goes and what its number and letter designation is and so on. So they can tell you, where they go. And, it's great fun. It takes, it probably took me 200 minutes to put together the last AM radio I put together. And, so it's great fun. And what I learned later, and which is somewhat interesting to know, I saw this at convention in St. Louis. The American Printing House sells a snap circuits kit with the Braille instructions, all the parts labeled in Braille and everything. But it's a snap circuits junior, which is, I think, probably the lowest level. So you're not going to build an AM radio with it, but there are all kinds of little projects you can make with it, which would be interesting and fun. Okay. Next.
All right. Thank you, Frank. And I would just like to say about Frank, when I approached him with this idea, I'm like, well, I know you have multiple things that you do. It's, you do drones, you do ceramics, you do all kinds. So talk to Frank about living like, with your passion and your heart and doing lots of different things that make you happy. And so the next person I would like to call is Jolene Ferguson, a member of my own Walla Walla chapter. She is actually the very first person that I met, even before I moved to Washington, starting my new journey. And so she has a dear place in my heart. She is one of the most incredible seamstresses I've ever met. And I will let her tell you more about that, but Jolene Ferguson. Maybe she is not here. Jolene? Okay, well, I guess we will move on to Dan Lavelle then. And if she comes here, we'll get to her next. But Dan Lavelle actually has a booth at the exhibit hall, so you can actually see what he does. That is woodworking, and it's beautiful, and I will let him go ahead next.
Good afternoon. How's everybody today? Well, I'm here to talk about my hobby of woodworking and, my passion for it. And one thing I would like to say is, regardless of your male, female, young or old, regardless of your whatever you're passionate about, don't give up, pursue it. There's ways to overcome the obstacles. Back in 2007, I started woodworking. watching my dad and a friend of the family named Brian Ott, watching them. And then I started out initially making pens. And from there, I progressed to making bowls, vases, and a variety of other items. And recently, I've started working with stone. And now what I do to overcome that, I use magnifiers, and then I have calipers where they have the voiceover, which will tell me exactly how thick the material, the wood or the stone is that I'm dealing with. That way, I'm going to be consistent the entire width of the bowl where I don't have a thin spot on certain sides. Let's see what else I'm doing. And some of the items I make, like I make knives. And one item I haven't made yet that I really want to do is build a guitar. I think it would be neat. The main thing would be finding the pieces of the rosewood or the wood I would use to do the front and back. You know, as far as, you know, I would like to do it as all as one piece rather than having to have a bunch of separate small pieces. One thing, what I enjoy about woodworking is I can take a block, simple block of wood, and it doesn't have to be something exotic. And a lot of times in its initial form, it looks rather drab, but as I turn it and then, I finish it, the colors, the grain, it really comes out and it turns into something beautiful. And so that's one of the things I like about it. And then like for bowls or a vase, a lot of the times I don't even know the shape or you know, of the item that I'm going to make. I just kind of go as I'm turning it on the lathe, I just kind of just go with it and see how it turns out. And so those are the aspects that I really enjoy. It's kind of like whether you're a writer or if you like to cook, just experimenting with, you know, like new recipes or what have you, the creativity part of it I really enjoy. And so really the main thing as far as any limitations as far as the woodworking is, obviously the size of the piece of wood that you're using, because that'll determine the size of the item that you can make. Other than that, it's just your mind, you know, whatever you can imagine. As far as the equipment that you need for woodworking or the stoneworking, it depends on obviously what you're going to be making, because costs can vary tremendously. For example, if a person is going to be making pens or, you know, small items, you might be in investments, I'll say anywhere from say $2,000 to $5,000 for all the equipment. If you're planning on doing like furniture, then you're looking at considerably higher investment, because the planers and some of the other equipment, you know, you need something a lot larger in scale to handle the size of the pieces of wood that you'd be dealing with. Myself at the shop that I have at home, I have, well, like a dust collector, which is important because you don't want to breathe all that stuff in, air filters, drill press, lathe, bandsaw, table saw, grinder, belt sander, different. Those are some of the basic items that, you know, I use in my work. As far as safety, that's the next thing I'd like to talk about, because it's very important, is that it takes only a split second to get, you can get seriously injured. So you have to be concentrating all the time, or be focused on what you're doing. Some of the safety equipment that I use is I use a mask for filtration so I don't breathe in all the dust. I have safety glasses and a face shield. And then for a medical kit in my shop, I have an eye rinse station, Band-Aids, gauze, Neosporin, hydrogen peroxide, other things. I also have a phone in there, so in case something really bad is, a lot of times you don't necessarily have to have time to go into the house and, you know, make, you know, you don't have that time luxury. The other is if nobody's home and you're the only one there, or another idea is to have a speaker where you have like an intercom going from the house to the shop, vice versa. That way, if somebody's in the house, like your wife, for example, or your children, then, you know, you can let them know. That way they can react as well. A perfect example as far as safety goes, last month I was turning a bowl in my shop and I hit a crack in the wood that was just naturally in the wood. The wood came spinning off the lathe, flew up, hit the ceiling, created an 18-inch hole in the ceiling, came down, hit the floor, and then bounced off the walls twice and then finally stopped. So, you get hit by something like that, you're going to get injured. let's see, what else is there? I talked about that. Finishes. When I finish the wood, after I turn it, I usually start with, maybe 80 to 100 grit sandpaper. Then I work my way all the way up to 12,000 grit. And then, I'll use a tack cloth to get off any residual dust, and then I apply the finish, whether it be a butcher block finish if I'm using, if it's going to be used for food, if it's just going to be for display purposes. I like to use Danish oil or sea fin. They use that on boats, and it's a really hard finish. Properties of wood I'd like to discuss next, and what that is, I have, different woods have different qualities. Some are more brittle than others, and there's a wood called Thuja Burl. I call it my grease pen because it's really greasy. I mean, you go through, you have to probably stop about every 5 to 10 minutes and clean the tool in order to be able to continue because it's that bad. Others are more brittle. For example, snake wood. It's a very beautiful wood, but it cracks real easy. Some accomplishments that I've had this year that I'm most proud of regarding my woodworking is I've had my work featured down at the Olympia Mall for 4 weeks. The manager there asked me if she could show it. I have my work in an art gallery, and I was asked to make I'm not going to mention the individual's name in the military, to make a box for a flag that was in the Gulf War, which was sent to the White House. But there are several people I would like to acknowledge that without their tutelage or mentoring as far as my woodworking, that I wouldn't be as good as I am today, which is I still have a lot to learn. One is my dad. The second person is, his name is Brian Ott. And last but not least is Bronson Gu. He's retired now from the OTC, but he is an incredible person and has great wealth of knowledge regarding woodworking. And so I really appreciated the opportunity to be able to work with him. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. And I really appreciate what you said about you're always learning, because that's, that's another aspect of, living with passion, is that you're never done learning. And whether it's learning the same thing you love or 1,000 different things. So thank you for that thought. All right. Well, I think we have Jolene now. So yay. I already gave you a wonderful introduction. So I will pass it over to Jolene.
I'm sitting down. How much time do I have, Heather?
7 to 10.
7 to 10 still. Okay, good. Okay. Just hold on 1 second. I was going to time myself a little bit. Okay. Heather asked me to come and talk about my quilting. And so I thought I'd just give a little history of how I've started sewing. It started in high school. The School for the Blind, we had Mrs. Flansburg was our home ec teacher, and we made a few simple things. And I probably never would have carried on with it had my mother not bought some items, and for a gift, she got a free sewing machine, which she already owned one, and so she didn't need another one. And so I started sewing when I graduated from college and enjoyed making a few things. And when I moved into my new apartment, I made curtains and valances and a toaster cover and various things. And I took some classes at a sewing store in our community, and they were very helpful. I made some, I made a t-shirt and some pants and a jacket and a man's sport coat, actually. But I never did a lot of any one thing. I didn't sew then for quite, what's happening here? Sorry. I'm not sure. Okay, I didn't sew for quite a while, but a couple years ago, I gave up my guide dog to retirement, and I wanted her to have a new dog bed when she went to her new home. And so I got out my old machine that I'd bought in the 70s, and it hadn't been used much, and I bought the material, and I started sewing, and it only sewed backwards. I said, I could sit on the back of the machine and do it that way, but maybe I should take it in and have it cleaned. And so I did. And you may, probably won't, but could recognize Walla Walla Sew and Vac and Spa. And they were actually the recipient of one of the awards last year for how helpful they were to me. Well, first of all, they told me that there was one broken piece, and it would cost $300 to fix it. And then they'd see what else was wrong with my machine. So, you know, my decision was pretty simple. I think it's time for a new machine. And so it was easy for them. I said, I don't want one of those that's all computerized that I can't work. So they found one with knobs, and it also had a needle threader. And, you know, they spent an hour or so with me, or even more, teaching me to use the needle threader. It's better than those little things we have used with the little wires, but there is a way you have to hold your mouth to do it just exactly. So I did that. And so it's a quilting store, actually. And so in casual conversation, I said to one of the ladies, I've always wanted to make a quilt. Now, that's one of my problems. I've always wanted to try anything new. And so I just expected her to go, yeah, well, I don't know if you could do that because you'd have to line up the corners and it's precision. And I just expected that. No, that isn't what I got. She, without skipping a beat, she went and said, you could make a jelly roll quilt. And a jelly roll quilt, she brought me over a jelly roll. And a jelly roll is, it's a really nifty way for a blind person to sew, because what they have done is somebody has chosen 5 or 6 different patterns that all go together, colors that kind of, complement each other. And so you don't have to cut anything, and you don't have to choose any colors. I mean, you can choose with someone telling you, but they've done a lot of that work. Then when you go to sew it, you sew all the ends together. So in other words, you pick up one strip and you pick up the second strip, sew the ends together. Go to the next end, sew the ends together. Well, pretty soon, with each strip being 40 inches and 40 or more strips, you've got quite a long piece there, probably 150 feet of strips. So then you put the two sides together and you sew all the way down. They have two strips wide and half the length. And you do it again, and you have four strips wide and half that length, till all of a sudden it actually starts looking like a rectangle, and it could possibly be a quilt. So you don't have to do all the fancy matching of corners and all that. So I took it home, and I did some internet research, and I made my top, and I went back in, and I worked with them, and they showed me how to put the quilting in and the backing. And at that point, you take safety pins and pin it every 4 inches all across. And I did all that. And then I went home, and I sewed the stitching to keep the back and the front together, and then I bound it. And it was really a lot of fun. And they said, well, you should join this quilting contest. We have a contest going, and you should enter your quilt. Same store. I thought, no, this is one quilt, and I have never made a quilt. But they said, oh, yes, you should do this. So, of course, never wanting to turn down a challenge, I entered the quilt. Well, it wasn't a contest for who had the best quilt. It was a contest for who could bring the most people into the store to vote for your quilt. That's easy, because we had the Delta Gamma girls at Whitman, and we were working with them, and I have a lot of friends and acquaintances. So the word got out, and I tied for first place. Then I had to choose a number. Yeah, I had to choose a number, and I chose the right number, and I won the contest. So what did I win? Another sewing machine. So I said, well, if I'm going to have another sewing machine, it's going to have to go to good use. And there were some ladies who really sew well at our church, and they sew every Thursday morning. So I went and joined their group, and we make dresses for Africa. They're called pillowcase dresses, and I could describe those, but I don't know that that's the deal here. But anyway, the newspaper got the word of the contest and the winner, and of course, when they realized who won, they wanted to do a little article, which they did. Then the television from the Tri-Cities got word of it, and they wanted to do a segment on the news, and so I got to do that. That was really fun, and they did a pretty nice job. How can you condense an hour interview into about 30 seconds or a minute or 2 minutes maybe? But they did a pretty fair job. So Heather asked me to talk about quilting. I thought, well, okay. But she said, you know, maybe you should make a quilt. And I said, oh, I don't know. But so I got to thinking about that, and I thought, what would be a nifty quilt for? Here comes the ad. I could make a really nifty quilt for WCB. It would be, if I could do it, it would be a leadership quilt, putting a T-shirt from every year that we've had leadership. So I posed this question to my sewing group, because they were quilters, some of them, and they actually knew how to do quilts beyond the jelly rolls. And so I gathered up T-shirts from people, lots from Cindy, and we all got together in my sewing group one morning, and they stretched them all out on these tables and decided which colors would go good. And then they looked at their fabric, and they found some fabric to donate for the between. There's a T-shirt, and then there's a little strip between each of the T-shirts, 2 inches wide. So they each have like a little frame around them. And then they found the backing that would go with it, and they donated that. One of the ladies had some stuff to put in the quilt, and what do you call that? See, I'm really not a quilter by they got that, and they put in, but there wasn't enough. Somebody went and bought some and said, no, this is my gift. And somebody knew somebody that does the top stitching, and they took it to that person to do the top stitching. And I'll tell you what I did. First of all, before you cut out the T-shirts, you have to put some stay on them. You have to iron on some stuff to make the T-shirts not be stretchy so that they hold their shape. And we all were doing that, cutting them out and doing that. And one of the ladies took it home on Thursday. And on Friday night, she came to my house and she said, I've got a row done. And she was so excited. It was 9 o'clock and she brought this thing and said, look at this. I've got this row done. So anyway, it's been really fun and they are all really excited for that. And it has Braille and large print. And I asked the person who quilted it not to quilt over the Braille and the print so that it would still be recognizable for people who read Braille with their fingers. And they did their best to do that. Anyway, I love a challenge. And how much time do I have? I've totally lost myself. Pardon?
2 minutes.
2 minutes?
3 minutes.
Okay. The store, instead of, I wanted to buy a rotary cutter, which is it cuts like really sharp, very sharp. And I found one that has an actual track, but they told me, I'm not going to sell you this. You have to put it on a certain kind of pad so you don't cut everything underneath there. And they said, we can't really sell you this in good faith until we can see that you can line it up and do everything. And so on their own, they took that thing and they put markings at every half inch so that I could use it. When I got my new sewing machine, they took puff paint and made drawings of all the different fancy stitches so that I knew how, when I dialed it, what stitch I would be making. So they've been just fabulous to me. And what I would say is, it isn't me. It's just people that have come alongside me and really helped me all the way through. And the door is opened. And it's been a great lot of fun. Made friends. And that's my story.
Thank you, Jolene. One thing that she omitted from her story is when she got the sewing machine, I told her, you know, I'd like to learn how to sew. So she brought it over. I spent about a day trying to learn how to thread the machine and use the needle threader. And I'm like, nope. No, no. So it is really quite wonderful what she does. But I guess the thing I would like to leave you all with is just two words. No limitations. And do we have time for any questions or maybe any one question or one or two questions?
Question back here.
Come in.
Got one for you. Hey, Lou, here we come.
All right.
You know, you think her husband would let her have a microphone to talk. It's coming.
My question is, Jolene, how do you cut your fabric for your quilts straight? Do you use a paper cutter or another method? For Jolene.
What was the question?
Do you use a paper cutter so that you can cut fabric straight to put into a quilt? Or do you have someone do it? Or do you have another method?
Yeah, not only for quilts, but lots of things. I have a paper cutter. And if I want to make, like, the dog bed was 33 inches long. So I put three pieces of cardstock together, taped them end to end. And it would be 36 inches on the other side. Then I cut another 3-inch strip and then taped it all. Then I had a pattern to go. And I don't like to use tape measures and stuff. I find that those kinds of ways to make patterns are great. And there's something I found at Joann's that's kind of a plastic. I don't even know what it's called. I have it in my phone, but it's, you can, cut it and it doesn't disintegrate like paper. And you can also braille on it. The braille is a little bit faint, but with a slate and stylus, so you can use it to label things even. And I make a strip that's an inch, a strip that's an inch and a quarter, inch and half, inch and three quarter, you know, down to a half inch, up to a 4 inches, you know, like that. So I have various strips that I, with widths that I can use, yeah.
This is Reg, and I have a friend question for Francis here. Frank, I was just wondering, when you're working on these things with Ira, what level of detail can they get? Do they get a better resolution with the glasses or the phone? And I guess they have to have you take a still picture when it's, you know, if the video isn't good enough to get a good picture of what you're doing there.
Yeah, it worked much better with the camera in the phone than with the glasses. Of course, I have the old glasses too, but I think that's probably still the case.
Now it's handy for Julie.
All right. All right. Thank you all, and give them all a big hand.
All right. Wasn't that exciting? Boy, it made me feel unskilled. Anyway, the next is our chapter roundup for about 8 minutes. And I wasn't told which chapters we're going to speak now. Anyone in the room told about that?
I know our chapter is at
220. 220? You're on. Do you need a mic? Do you want to sit there with the mic, or what would you prefer? Why don't we pass it? Want to come up there? Want to come up here? Okay.
I don't know what other chapters were.
We I don't either. All right, come on up, maybe. Why not? We can just pass the mic up here. Yes, why not? Do you want to do it?
We're still clearing out.
Or we could pass the mic, either. Hi there.
Sneak you in here.
Ready?
There's a chair and a table sort of there. Mm-hmm. Maybe Heather will share a microphone.
Okay. So, hi, I'm Gloria Walling. I am the president of the Capital City Council of the Blind in Olympia, and so the idea of the roundup, of course, is to talk about something that we did this year and something that we're proud of. And one of the things that our chapter has done that we have been very proud of is our work with inner city transit. We found out that on short notice that they were going to be changing their bus routes. Unfortunately, the promo they did and the outreach they did to notify of this change didn't make it to us and didn't make it to a lot of people in the community that were going to be affected. So when we found out, we had three members in our chapter that worked out of town that depended on the bus to get to work. And so we were very concerned about their livelihood and their well-being and their ability to get to work. So we contacted Inner City Transit, and that, of course, is our local public transportation, and explained to them that we were concerned and that we had issue with the fact that they had not contacted us and let us be a part of this change. So after some discussion, they came to a meeting and they talked to us, and then they had a board member come and talk to us. And we went to some of their meetings, but by then the decision had pretty much been made, so I'm not really sure why we went to the meetings. Anyway, so in the end, what happened was they ended up working with us and taking time with a couple of our members to make sure that they had routes and that they were able to get to work. So we were really pleased in the end with the effort and the responsibility that they ended up taking to make sure that our members were able to get to work. So we were really pleased with that, and we ended up establishing a set regular meeting schedule so that they would come about 90 days before any changes would take place, because they have regular schedule changes. I think it was in March and in September when they do their changes. So we have them on the calendar on a regular schedule to come and talk to us about those changes And one of the thing that we did real quickly that we're really proud of that I just found out about this a couple of days ago here at the convention was we had an individual who has done a lot of work for us, Sandra Brown, who has done a lot of work for us on pedestrian signals. And so she had written to the entity that is responsible for the light near her, and it was somebody that we had worked with before. And so the gentleman had taken the letter and said, I will send it to someone and we'll see what we can do, but we've already, you know, used our money and it probably will be a while, blah, 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 so on and so forth. And he would take the letter to someone higher up that we had worked with in the past and see what they said. And evidently a couple of days ago, they got back to her and said, you know what, we have some extra money and we're going to put your light in. So we got it on order. So we're very proud that we were able to do that. And then we have such a good working relationship with our cities on our pedestrian signals. So that's what we've been doing and what we're proud of.
Thank you. And the next person that said they were going to come up, who was that?
Colette?
Hi, I'm Colette Arvidson, and I'm the treasurer for Skagit and Island Counties Council of the Blind. That includes, in case you don't know, up in North End, where the island, Fidalgo Island, the island you get on when you want to go out to all those beautiful San Juan Islands, plus Mount Vernon, Cedro Woolley, it covers a lot of territory. So transportation is one of our big, big challenges, and I know that's a big challenge for a lot of people. But one of the exciting things that we did in March of this year is we worked with Skagit Transit, and they're travel trainers. And we said we wanted to make sure more of our members knew that they actually could use public transportation for something fun. And we decided to do the tour of the Seattle Art Museum. So the travel trainers made sure that we could handle it. We had to meet together in Mount Vernon using various paratransit to get there for some people. And then we had 10 of us who took the two buses, the 70 miles down to Seattle, and then walked about 4 blocks to the Seattle Art Museum for a described tour. They have those every month, sometimes more than once a month, so they specifically described all the artwork. So we felt like we had fun doing it, but we also let our members, a lot of whom are newly blind, thinking that because they can't drive, they can't get anywhere, understand that public transit's available. And for those of you who live in more rural areas, you know public transit isn't that available, but just being able to connect to Seattle made a lot of fun. We're also trying to do as much outreach to the community, and one of those connections we made by some of our members participating in the Braille Challenge last year. So we met a TVI who is from Bellingham and worked with our Lions Club that puts on the special needs Easter egg hunt and the community Easter egg hunt in Anacortes, and had our first beeping Easter egg hunt with 3 blind children participating. So those are just a couple of the things. We like to have fun. We're also doing a lot for advocacy as far as getting our members to speak up about the audible lights that you can't hear, as well as the Safeway in our town is now has the descriptive labeling, which is the first one in Anacortes to have it on a regular basis. Script talk. Thank you. That's the president of our club, my husband, Andy. So, but, you know, those are, I could go on forever, but we have only 1 minute and I might probably already done. And we did use the monies that we had from last year from what used to be stipend and now is a grant, to support one of our members who could not have afforded to come to the convention. So we're paying her expenses, hotel, and the registration to be here. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I see a hand in the back of the room. I'll be a runner to the hand in the back of the room.
I am. Any other chapters?
Yes, this is Reg. I'm sorry that our president could not be here today. I'm the vice president of Yakima Valley Council of the Blind, and we have done a couple interesting things this year, one of which was working with Amy from the library, Talking Book and Braille Library, and she came in and we did a combined event where we had a reception and something else in a park, and we got to pass out our materials and she was able to, and we did something at a senior center there and just helped her to coordinate to get more awareness out about the talking books and what's available through the library and to Eastern Washington, where there are really a lot of people that aren't aware of the services. Another interesting thing is that we have a low vision clinic in Yakima, and they had heard that Heritage University, where they graduate a lot of teachers and nurses, was looking for some visually impaired people to come out and discuss their journey. And so myself and Sally Mayo, who some of you may know, did go there for one of the classes and met with all the nursing students this year, and they want to have us come back next year. And we were there for a couple hours, met with their disability student services coordinator. It's a private school, so they really have a long way to go on that stuff, and they are under the assumption under the ADA that they really don't have to provide those things because they're a private school, and that's one of the things I'd like to check. But it was still a really good conversation, and we brought, you know, Braille and just let them know our stories, and it was a good interaction. We have a business meeting and social meeting every month, and still do the bowling. You probably read about that in the news line. So we try to be out in the community and approachable so that other people can find us. Thank you.
Great.
And I believe Spokane was the last
Spokane
one.
Spokane is next. Thank you.
Okay. This is Kathy with Pierce County Association of the Blind. We're kind of rebuilding, getting new flyers, getting our logo this year. We manage that. Our next big project is getting our website redone and organized. We're working on that. And we had our annual fundraiser, Spaghetti in the Dark, which was very good. Next year, this coming year, it's on March the 9th. Had to think. And we're teaming up with Christ Lutheran Church. That's where we have the Spaghetti in the Dark at. And we're going to do an outreach for the Nativity House, which is a place that helps people that are homeless and women and children. So we're going to also have a drive for toiletry products at that Spaghetti in the Dark to help support the church too. We also have a blind outreach on that Lori Allison does on the third Tuesday. People just come and they talk about blind issues, their life, and what goes on to help everybody deal with daily different new ideas about how to do things. And that's been going on for quite a while. Lori Allison does that. And we do a little bowling with Tacoma Tide. You know, we had our meeting at the bowling alley and then afterwards went bowling with the Tacoma Tide. And this year we just really want to continue to reach out and find other organizations to help and start fundraising for sponsorships like food banks or different organizations, and just make that a annual thing that we do, or a monthly donation every year.
Thank you. Great. Wow. You can really tell our chapters are actively involved in their communities and within themselves to help people grow. So thank you all so much. Our next presentation is Officer Outlaw here. Oh, hi. Great. I get to introduce you. This sounds such an relevant one, you guys, that we all need to think about. And it's called Active Shooter Situations. The question is, do you have a plan? And here to talk to us about it is Officer Leroy Outlaw. He is from the Education and Training Section of Seattle Police. Officer, do you want to speak up here?
Sure.
You can have the microphone.
I actually have one.
Oh, I get to keep mine.
You get to keep yours.
That's
yeah, that's yours. Normally I don't need a microphone. I get told I talk really loud, so projection is not usually my issue. So for everyone who giggled in the beginning, yes, I heard you. Outlaw is my last name. Okay? I did not change it. Okay? Like many of my students believe, I changed my name because I think I had a weird name or a wussy name to start with, and I needed one that was more tough. Okay? With the name Outlaw, you have two choices in life. I can go to prison, or I could try to be a badass. So I went the other route because I have a problem with small spaces. All right, so I do try to bring a little levity to the topic because of the fact of I'm the one that gets to bum you out for the next 20 to 30 minutes. Okay? Everyone else has been talking about things that are super positive and happy, and I'm the one that gets to talk about the things that scare you and keep you up at night. Okay? So, even though I do try to bring a little levity to it, believe me, I do take it very seriously. This is one of the jobs that I get to do. I was a patrol officer in Seattle for the past 15 years. I worked in Lake City, which is in the northern part of Seattle. I worked at a time when I got up to go to work at 1 o'clock in the morning, and I got off at noon. Okay, so I'm probably a little bit older. Age works when you wake up at 1 o'clock in the morning. But I've had a chance to now move to the training section. Now my job is to train our rookie officers, our new officers, and get them prepared for a day when no one in your life can prepare for. Okay. So what I get to talk to you about today is we want to talk about the active shooter situation. Okay, because of the fact of it is occurring more and more regularly in our society. And unfortunately, most people believe that this is a new occurrence. It's something that's been more recently happening. It's been happening for a very, very long time. It's just something we talk about more so now than we ever have. Reason being, why do we know about it so much more from all corners of the world and country? It's because of things like the internet. Okay, where before, you had a 24-hour news cycle. If something happens, I had 24 hours to research it, write about it, put it in a newspaper, and in the morning, you'd get it in the paper. In the evening, you watched it on the news. Now if it happens, I got about 30 seconds to research it. I got about a minute to put it on the internet. And it's worldwide and within 5 minutes. Okay, so you hear about every single incident that happens in the world. Okay, but what I'm going to talk to you about today isn't difficult. It's not hard. It's not complicated. Hopefully it's not hard to remember. Okay, because you're not cops. You're not military personnel. Okay, we don't have you guys walking around in the streets with guns and body armor and all the different things. Okay? Most people walk in the room and they go, "Officer Al, I'm a regular person who just lives a regular life. Okay? I just want to know what's the best way for me to be safe if I'm unlucky enough to be at one of those places where this happens." Okay? So we work with the Department of Homeland Security. We work with FEMA and everybody else, and they came up with a pretty basic, safe, and simple way to increase your chances of making a home to the people you care about. Okay? And it's a pretty simple thing. It's three words. Run, hide, and fight. Okay? Those are three words that most of you probably heard somewhere before. And all we're going to do today is we're going to just expand on it just a little bit. All right? So the first thing we want to do is actually talk about what is an active shooter. Okay? It is someone who's trying to shoot you. Okay? And there's a whole bunch of people around in a small confined space. All right? But we also want to get away from the fact of it's not just shooting anymore. Okay, Boston Marathon, they made pressure cooker bombs. Okay, go to Europe, they're using trucks now. It's a whole lot easier to get a truck than it is to get a gun. Okay, so they're using a lot of different things. But that is it in a nutshell. Someone who's trying to hurt a large group of people in a small space. Right? Now, if you're in one of these situations, like I said, the three things we can do is run, we can hide, and we can fight. All right, but before we go there, now that everybody's all like, "Oh, Officer Arlo, I'm so depressed right now. I was in a great mood, and now I'm super sad." Okay? There's one thing I want you to remember. You have a very low likelihood of ever being in one of these events. Okay? For those of you who've been to Seattle, or actually anywhere in the corridor that is between Tacoma all the way through Everett, you have a much better chance of getting hit by a car crossing the street, because people here are horrible drivers. Okay? Then you do it being involved in one of these incidents. Okay? So, if you're feeling brave, cross the street in Seattle. Okay? You have a much better chance of getting hit by a car. All right? But, now let's break it down. Step one, you find yourself in one of these bad situations is, run. Okay? The best way not to be hurt in a situation is, don't be there. Okay? Yes, your parents got it right years ago. If you're not there, you're not going to get in trouble. Okay? Now, I know with the group, because, oh, by the way, I was actually brought here by Kevin Daniels, who's not in the room. Okay, But he was like, yes, my group faces additional challenges. Okay. I get that. It just means we have to plan a little bit more accordingly. Okay. So, running. If some one of these happens, we all know there's going to be a large group of people probably running with you. Okay. And maybe you don't move as quickly as a group of people that is going to be around you. Okay? If you have a guide dog, great. Okay? If you don't, how do I not get trampled in the middle of this giant crowd and get knocked over and run over? Okay? Especially if you think back to Las Vegas. Okay? Imagine a crowd of 3,000 people all trying to run in the same direction. Okay? Now, if you don't move as quickly, here's a trick. Don't try to run with the crowd. You're not going to move as fast as they will. What you want to do is work your way at a diagonal towards the edge of that crowd, but still going in the same direction. Because the epicenter, the center of those large crowds, is probably the most dangerous place to be. I don't care who you are. If you can work your way towards the edges of those crowds, one, they tend to open up. You're not being crowded and hit as often. But also, it makes it a little bit easier to move. Okay? Have a place to go. If you're in a new location, I'm sure a lot of you do it. If you don't, it's just good planning. I don't care who you are. Is know the different ways for me to get out. Okay? If you only know one way to get out of a building, maybe where you work. Okay, maybe where you frequent regularly, get another one. Okay, because that's not just for this situation. That could be for any situation. If a fire breaks out and you're around me, one of the most unlucky people I've ever met, the one way I know to get out is going to be the one way that's actually on fire. Okay? If you don't believe I'm unlucky, I can bring one of my partners down and he can tell you about all the stuff I've walked into. Okay? There's nothing like being in 7-Eleven and having the guy in front of you trying to rob the place because he doesn't recognize the uniformed cop standing right behind him. Okay? I'm that guy. Okay? And when it comes to your stuff, your belongings, unless it's absolutely necessary for you, leave it. Okay? As important as you think your phone is to your life, okay, and I see it. I have a teenager at home. I understand how important a cell phone can be. Okay? Leave it. It doesn't matter. We'll get another one. I can replace a lot of things. Your insurance company is not going to replace you. Okay? So they always say, and make it known, if you need assistance, this is not the time to try to sit there and be proud and be self-reliant. Tell someone if you need help, and they will help get you out, because the whole trick to this is moving as fast as you can. Okay. Once you're outside, try to help other people from not going back in. There's nothing wrong with being vocal about what's going on inside, and you keep moving. Okay. People always say, Officer Allah, how long am I supposed to run? I tell them the same answer I tell them for everything. You run until you stop being scared. Okay, for me, that's about 2 feet in front of my front door. Okay. That is how far I am willing to go to get there. All right. Now, do you call 911 on the way out? No, that takes brain power. That takes time. That's going to make you move slower. Okay? You don't call 911 until you know you're safe, until you know you're very, very far away. Okay? That's when you call. Hey, believe me, there'll be plenty of people calling on 911. Trust me, you won't be the only person. Okay? Now, what if I can't run? Okay? What if I'm at work? And I'm sitting in my office, and it's happening somewhere down the hallway, and I'm like, uh-oh, that is the only place I can go to get out. I have nowhere to run. Next step is, you hide. Okay? With most of these situations, about 66% end within 5 minutes. 5 minutes, that's not a lot of time. So in that period of time, the individual does not have time to go looking for people, looking for victims. What they're trying to do is they're trying to be like, I'm just going to randomly choose whoever I can see. So if I can hide, I give myself a much better chance because now they have to look for me. That's too much work. That's too much effort. They will not take it. It's a proven factor. Okay, one we've actually seen from an FBI study we did that lasted about 13 years. where they looked at every single one. They saw the same principle. The people that were hiding had a much, much higher chance of survival because they were too hard to find. Okay. Now, how do I hide? Okay, it's pretty simple, right? If you're in a room, you lock that door. Okay. I'm going to put everything I can think of between me and that door. Barricade it up the best you can. Okay? I want you to treat it like you have a relative who just texted you. Hey, if you're at home, I'd love to come visit. I'm about 3 minutes away. And you hate this person. Okay? How do you act when that person's on the way? Same way I do. Honey, turn off all the lights. Honey, close all the curtains. Okay? Turn off everything that makes a sound. Okay? Shove the dog under a pillow. Lock us all in the back room and we're going to pretend like nobody's here. That's what you do in that same situation. Okay? You turn off the lights. Okay? You silence your phone. You barricade the door. You keep everybody as quiet as possible. Okay? Now, in the last group I did this with, there was a bunch of office workers, a bunch of very, I don't want to say rambunctious, high energy ladies, who were very, very good friends. One of them asked, my coworker is a screamer. I know. We go to scary movies. She screams the whole time. Can I knock her out by hitting her upside the head with whatever need be to keep us both alive? I'm going to tell you right now, I did not even answer the question. I'm like, you know, if you keep her alive, she'll probably forgive you tomorrow. But that is a choice you have to make. But do try to keep everyone as quiet as possible. If you have small children with you, you will be very, very surprised at how resilient they can be when you tell them the first thing that comes out of your mouth is, emergency, I need you to listen to me. Even the worst child in the world, when you scream, it's an emergency and I need you to listen to me, they snap too. There's something inherent in their brain that says when an adult says that there's an emergency, they will listen. You can get them to very well behave. You can get them to be quiet. You can keep them quiet. Okay? And then you stay. And people ask, when do I come out? Don't worry. Don't come out to find me. The cops will come find you. In the end, we'll find you. You just stay there. You stay there, you stay quiet, and you don't leave. Okay? Someone will come get you. Now, we tried to run. Couldn't run. Okay? Not a problem. We already talked about it. Now we'll hide. Oh, can't hide. What if the problem's already in the room with you? Oh, dang it. This is the worst day in the world. Okay? It might come down to it of saying you might have to protect your own life or protect the life of someone you care about. That's what we tell people. It's okay to fight. Okay? Legally, you are 100% covered to do whatever you need to do to stop someone who's trying to hurt you or someone else. Okay? I tell people all the time, you want to know how hard I want you to fight? Okay? Hopefully there's no one hyper-religious in the room. I'm probably going to offend you in the next second or so. Okay? I want you to fight like you're the third monkey on the ramp to the ark, and you just felt a raindrop. You beat that other monkey, you get on the ark. Or else you're not going to make it. All right? If anyone wants to complain, it's Officer Outlaw, OUTLAW, Seattle Police Department. I'll give you my lieutenant's number later if you're offended. Actually, he's my previous lieutenant. He just moved on. You can definitely have his number. He doesn't care anymore. Okay. So, but that's how hard I want you to fight. Okay? Do what you have to do. Work in groups. Okay. If that person comes in a room, work with everybody. Use improvised weapons. You hit them with whatever you're holding in your hand. Okay. If you get the opportunity and you put that person down, you incapacitate them, you don't have to sit on them. You don't have to keep them in custody or anything else. At that point in time, if you see an opportunity to run, there's your chance. Go. Go and you keep on going. Okay? If you do have to fight, also yell for help. It's amazing. It's amazing when someone's in the middle of a fight, how often people will come to your aid and go, you know what? Here we are. I guess you started it. yeah, I could probably help you out a little bit there. People will come to help you. It's amazing. We saw it at Seattle Pacific University. I had a chance to meet the young man who actually took down a shooter in his own college. Okay, about a week before graduation. He saw an opportunity, sprayed him with pepper spray, tackled him, tried to take a shotgun from him after he had already shot in two people. Okay, we made it in. He was laying on top of the guy. Someone else came along and was like, "What are you doing?" He goes, "I don't know. I heard him screaming. I came in, saw him laying on top of a guy, and decided I'd lay on top of him too." Luckily for the first guy, who was only about 140 pounds, the next guy was about 250 pounds. Okay? So he did a really good job of helping. Okay? But scream, yell for help. More and more people will come to help you. Okay, then let them. Okay? Now, lastly, we always say the last step in that whole process of run, hiding, and fighting is people always say, "That's when should I call 911? Okay? It's always the last step regardless of which one of those you choose. If you run, once I'm safe, I call 911. Okay? If I'm hiding, well, we want you to be as quiet as possible. If you think for any reason that you're in a safe enough place to do so, maybe you call 911. We've told people before, you can dial 911 even if it's happening outside around you. Dial 911, you don't have to say a word. You just leave the line open. Okay, we have the ability to track your cell phone. Only in an emergency, we don't do it all the time. Okay, for everyone who's paranoid in the room. Okay, in an emergency, I can ping your phone. I can figure out where you are. If I hear gunshots in the back of your phone call, I will ping your phone. I will come find you. Okay, last case scenario, if you had to fight, once you won your fight, you and your whole group of friends, call, yell, do whatever. Get us to come your direction. Okay? If you lose, it won't matter. Okay? Someone else will call for you. You're not going to lose. Okay? Because one, you're not going to be there, right? All right, now what happens when we show up? When the cops come in, oh, thank God the heroes are here. Hey, okay, remember this. Some of these people, you're talking about kids. And I see them every day, and it makes me feel older and older every single day. Okay, my age starts with a 4, and that's most I'm giving you. It's none of your dang business after that. Okay, but I got a kid now. They're 23, 24 years old. A lot of responsibility for a 23, 24-year-old kid. Okay? If you don't think they're scared when they walk into this, you are 100% wrong. Okay? We tell them, in 50% of the incidents where an officer has to go into an active shooter situation, they're going to get shot. Really good numbers, right? But we'll go in anyway. Because we signed up for this, you didn't. Okay? So they're going to be scared. There's little things you can do to help them out. Okay? If you see them coming, okay, you hear them coming. Sorry, bad choice of words. Okay? If you hear them coming, put your hands up. If you got something in your hands, drop it. Comply. Okay, they're going to say a couple things. One thing you're going to hear a lot is police get down. That's a good time to get down. Okay? That does not mean dance. Okay? Although if we said cops dance, I'm sure most of you would do it if you didn't care. Okay? Get down on the ground. Get low. It helps us actually see the room. Okay. Did you really just break a boogie out in the front row? He did. Okay. He did a little shimmy. It was nice. Okay? Right? Get down on the ground. It helps us scan the room. Most of the time, the bad guy is not the one who wants to listen to anything we have to say. If we say get down and everyone in the room gets down and one guy's sitting in the middle of the room with a gun, guess what? It's going to get loud very quickly. Okay? So, drop anything in your hands. Get down to the ground. Please don't scream at my guys. Okay? Most of them are already scared out of their minds. Okay? Screaming at them will not help. Okay? And then like we had in the front row, then just comply. Okay. Do not try to get in the middle of their groups. Okay? We understand you may need more assistance to get out. Okay? But understand their groups are going to be moving fast. They have one mission and one mission only, and that's they got to go find the person who's causing the problem and make it stop. And they're going to be moving quick. They're going to try to anyway. Okay? So we don't have time. We can't protect you. We can't put you in the middle of our group. Not to mention, is that where they want to be? If this group does run into the person who's trying to shoot people, you think they're going to just sit there and go, "Oh, it's the cops." Yeah, not gonna happen. They're gonna be like, I might as well shoot at you too, why not? Yeah, they're probably not in the middle of the group you want to be in. Okay, so, don't try to get in that formation. Now, at the end of the day, okay, you survived the situation. Congratulations. Okay? Now, how do I get back with my family? How do I get back with people I care about? Understand, when you get outside, they're going to keep you in groups because we're going to interview and we're going to check everybody we that before they leave. Okay, that's the reason some of these school events take so long to clear. We're going to check every single kid before we let them go. Okay, so just be understand, be patient. Okay, we're going to check them all. Your phone probably isn't going to work. Okay, we found that out in Katrina. Okay, some of the FEMA stuff. We went down there as well. We went to assist where we could. Okay? And what we found out is your cell phone won't make calls. Because everybody's on their phone. The entire network's jammed up. Okay? So this is a tip that works for any natural disaster as well. If your phone doesn't work because there is no network, send a text message. A text message will continue to try to send itself until it gets through. It just gets a little queue in line, and when this number comes up, it goes through, regardless of whether you're actively trying to do it or not. Send text messages. Here's another tip, especially for the earthquake capital of what's probably going to be the world one day. Okay? Have someone out of this area you can call. That's your designated call person. Someone who lives in, I don't know, Montana, Utah. We have grandma in Idaho. If an emergency, you don't call me, you call grandma. Because I'm going to call grandma. Because the networks that go out of the area will not be as jammed up as the networks that work inside this area. So when I call grandma and say, hey, when my baby girl calls you, okay, when Olivia calls you, I need you to tell her this. Or Olivia's already called me. She told me she's here. Great, grandma, you call her back. You tell her this. Have that person be your go-between. It will work, okay, even when the in-area ones don't. So have that person set up. Hey, you're going to be our call person. Congratulations, we'll be yours. Okay, and then get reunified with your family. Get reunified with everybody else, okay? So those are just some of the small basic tips and tricks and things that we have. This is usually like a much longer class. They asked me to condense it, so I knocked it down to 30 minutes, okay? But I wanted to give you guys the most basic, the most fundamental, and the absolute most important pieces. Was if you end up in a situation that's going poorly, okay, and you recognize the situation, first thing is always run. If you can't run, hide. And if those have both failed and you have no other choice, do what you have to do to protect yourself and everyone else. Fight like your life depends on it because it just might. All right? Everyone super bummed out yet? No? Man, I should give you guys my longer presentation. It's way more depressing. Okay, I'm going to come to you because I like to wander. Yes.
This question isn't really going to pertain to most people here, but I work at the city of Mount Lake Terrace, and I'm a fitness instructor in the water. And we've talked many times about what to do, and they more or less said, there's nothing we can do when we're in the water if there's an active shooter. Do you have any suggestions? Because we have kids everywhere. We're teaching and, you know, what would we do?
I would say the same thing. Anyone who says there's never anything you can do has never thought about it. Okay? Because how many emergency exits do you have? I'm going to get an indoor pool. Indoor pool. How many emergency exits are there? At least four emergency exits. You probably got the locker room area doors and everything else. Okay. Anyone who tells me there's nothing you can do, I tell them you're full of crud. Should you stay in the water? Nope. You go. You just try to get out as fast as you can. Try to head to the many exits. I just tell people, if you can hear it, go the other direction. Okay. So if I hear it coming from inside the gym, head towards all the exits. Now people will say, what if I have a lot of children? Okay. I'm going to say this as a father. I have a 5-year-old little girl who is my entire world right now because she still likes me. Right? Unlike my teenager who's a complete butthead. Okay. mainly because he's exactly like me. He is my penance to the world, I'm pretty sure, is my payment for my parents and what I did to them. But you take my 5-year-old, you scatter her to the wind. I'm fine with that. Okay? I understand most teachers and things are going to be like, well, I have a duty to these children. Yes, and if you can keep them together and you can guide them, sure. But if you're in the middle of it and you tell my kid to run, I'd much rather be like, I told your kid to run, I'm sorry, I don't know which way she went, versus, hey, I kept your kid in his room and a whole bunch of them got shot. Mm-hmm. So if you need to, you head to the nearest emergency exit and you run. Yeah. So the question is, do I put myself in between the problem and the children? Okay. And that's a choice I can't make for you. Okay. Me personally, I would always say I would do that. But that's because that's what I signed up to do. Okay. I made a pledge. I swore an oath I take very seriously. Okay. In a previous life and in this one that says I will stand between you and the problem. That's what I do. So for me, it works. For you, I would absolutely say that I think that makes you a hero. Okay, the fact you're even willing to do that and even thinking about that is huge. So what I would say is, when you get back, start to look around. What's the fastest way for me to get out of here? Okay, now granted, wintertime's coming. Mount Lake Terrace gets cold too. I know I live up there. Okay, what do I do with the kids when they're all wet and in the cold? One, hypothermia takes time. Okay, if they got shot, that's not done take very much time at all. All right, start looking at the businesses around you. Maybe you ask them, hey, we ever have an emergency? And we don't have to talk about this one. Maybe we use a fire or an earthquake. And maybe the building's not safe. And I have a bunch of children. Can I bring them to your business? Can I bring them inside your business? Make those relationships, make those connections with the businesses and other people around you to sit there and go, if I ever have an emergency, can I come to your place? Sure. If you ever have an emergency, feel free to come to mine. We can shelter you inside. We have water. We have other things. We just can be a gathering place for you to meet up with other people later on. Okay? If you have a lot of small children, you do it regularly, like you work a preschool, a daycare, or something like that, have a drill. Hey, kids, if I ever say emergency and I need you to run, I want you all to go here. I don't care how you get there. Get there. And just run over to this business and tell them that there's an emergency. Okay? Unfortunately, that's starting to become a reality for small children. Is we have to come up with an extra drill instead of just the fire drills. You don't have to tell them why. If I ever say emergency run, go meet Mr. Thompson at the bakery. He'll take care of you. Okay? But there's always a way to go. Always just go, 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 go. Yes. Yes, I'm going to ask you a question. Hopefully, if you don't want to answer, that's fine. What school district?
Seattle.
Okay. I've actually already met with your Seattle school district. Yes, me and my partner, Ed Anderson, went in and we went downtown. We're actually right by your main headquarters down by Soto District. We went in, we talked with the security, your security officer for the city. And we told him, lockdown works if the problem is outside. And then I lock down as fast as possible. That works great. What if the problem's inside? And then they were like, oh. Well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we don't want our schools to look like prisons, right? We want our schools to look open and inviting. Because we're not trying to get the kids prepared for anything but learn, right? So we have talked to the school districts on it before. Some schools have taken it upon themselves to do their own little trainings. From what I heard, that they had a new emergency protocols for some of the schools they pushed out to the elementary schools. If you want, I will say you could have your school's security officers or principal reach out to us. I will give you my name and email address later. And we have no problem coming out your school and talk again, but we have talked to the Seattle School District previously. and more schools are starting to look at this because it's just a reality now. Yeah, so are we. We had that meeting about a year, year and a half ago. So any other questions for me on the way out? I'm always willing to hang out afterwards to talk to anyone as well. I'm glad it worked. I'm glad it worked out. We spent a lot of time training. Unfortunately, we spend a lot of time training this topic. So we've actually worked very well with a lot of school districts have opened their doors for us and say, after hours or you want to, you can come and you can train in our building. So then we bring in the officers in that region. So that way they're not preparing for a school. They're preparing for their school. So that way it's a little bit easier, a little bit faster.
Let's give the officer a hand.
Did we want to do a door prize? Are door prize people here before we do a break? All right. How about two of them? And then we'll take us.
Make sure one of them is my name.
Yes, yes. You can do it?
I'll do it.
All right. Do you have a microphone?
Yes, I have. Right. Oh, is it working? It is. Okay. So let me get to my file that has the thing on it. Okay, so the last door prize that I have for today, there will be a ton more tomorrow, is more of those Christmassy hand soaps. This one's got three in it. And $20. This is courtesy of the United Blind of Spokane. And oops, knocking over my drink, that's always great. And the winner is... not Shannon Curry. Byron Kazmarski? Okay. Somebody else. Named Amber DiGirlandio? DiGirlando?
She's not here?
Not in here? Okay. Wayne Lampel? Lample?
Oh, you have Carrie Lee.
All right.
One more thing?
I don't. That's the last one I brought.
That's the last one. All right. Well, let me look at my watch here.
Want to do maybe a 10-minute break? And then we'll start at 3:20, just a few minutes later than normal. We'll see you when you come back. All right.